This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Also presents Take Care On Air.
Interviews, current affairs and events from across Victoria.
Also is
your community hub and also is
proud to sponsor Joy.
Hello and welcome to Take Care On Air, the Also Foundation's weekly current affairs, sexual health, culture and community broadcast. I'm Crusader Hillis.
And I'm not Kath Duncan, I'm Shane McMaster. I'm filling in for Kath Duncan while she's in Thailand on a disability
junket seminar.
Yeah, I'm quite jealous about
festival.
That.
Yes, I know. She's had a few of them in the last year or two. Look, today on the show we'll be catching up with Jez Pez, the founder and co-editor of the Dude Trans Man magazine. We'll also be talking to Sydney-based social change artist Deborah Kelly about her latest art project that portrays families who've been created through reproductive technology.
And later in the show we'll be having a chat with Chill Out Committee member Max Primer about the highlights of this year's Chill Out Festival.
But first up we have Lisa Daniel, well-known director of the Melbourne Queer Film Festival, in the studio to take us through a director's eye view of this year's Queer Film Festival program. Good afternoon, Lisa, and welcome.
Afternoon. How are you both?
We're pretty good, actually.
Now that the weather's not quite as insane, it's a little bit better.
It is a little bit better. Now, look, a year can't be a long time in the life of a Queer Film Festival director. I'm sure you're hardly finished programming one festival when you need to be on the next. How long does it take to bring a festival like ours together?
Good question. I actually just started the 2013 database about 4 weeks ago. So you pretty much are starting one as you're launching another. So, you know, just as you sort of lock off your own program, we sort of lock off. So the festival's March 15 to March 25. We lock off around about January 5. And pretty much then, you know, there's Sundance in Berlin. So some great festival potential comes up for 2013. So I sort of basically start the planning for then, you know, now.
And do you get to go to any of these other festivals?
I don't get to go to Berlin and Sundance because they're just before our festival. So there's just I just couldn't do it schedule-wise. But I do get a frame line, which is the San Francisco yeah, which is kind of, we call it the Cannes of queer film. So, and I would like to get to Toronto at some stage. They have a pretty good stable of queer titles then, and that's kind of October, November. So I could possibly go to that.
So, Lisa, this is festival number 22, is that correct?
That's correct, yep.
Yep, so I understand that the festival has a large selection panel, there's a large board, there's many people involved. A lot of organisations really struggle to get people involved on a regular basis,
yep,
and having a really strong presence and a strong work ethic behind the festival.
Yep.
What's your secret? How do you keep the vibe going year after year?
Yeah, I think any organisation's only as good as its whole team. I mean, you can have great leaders and that sort of thing, but, you know, I guess the leadership has to come from the top down. But, you know, I think keeping good people interested in the festival is key for us. Look, I think, you know, film is something that people mostly like. I mean, it's not brain surgery. It's a fun thing. It's entertaining. Being part of organising a festival that is all about film, you know, it's not a difficult thing. It's, you know, it's stressful and all that sort of thing, but it's a fun thing. So, you know, it isn't difficult to get selection panel members. It's not difficult to get board members. A lot of our board have been around for a long time. They've stayed on the board for a long time. And some of our selection panels have been on the panel for 8 or 10 years. So what we try and do is sort of keep a good stable of long-term advocates for the festival, like either on the board or the selection panel. And then, you know, you absolutely need to have newbies every so often to bring a fresh face to the festival. So, and, you know, we have volunteers that have been volunteering for the festival for years and years. So I think, you know, a lot of people involved in the festival look forward to it. It's a great outlet. It's a really good social thing. And it's one of the few events where you can actually see a genuinely queer audience. Like, you know, you can go to the festival club and hang out with your gay friends and your lesbian friends and your trans friends and your bisexual friends, and everybody's together. It's not like, you know, you sort of, you know, if you're going to clubs and you're going to a gay club and you can't necessarily bring your lesbian friends and that sort of thing. So it truly is a really queer event.
Yeah, so do you think that's part of the reason why you've been swamped with volunteers year after year as well, that it's a good social thing?
Yeah, I think so. We see a lot of our volunteers, you know, form partnerships with people. They form great friendships. You know, for every shift they do, they get a ticket to another session. So, you know, for their time, they get a T-shirt and it's just a really good experience. So it's not like they're kind of having to be around at 4 o'clock in the morning moving water barriers or, you know, it is hard work, but it's fun work. So, and we try and make it as social as possible. So I think that's what works for us, and hopefully we'll continue to work.
So what are some of the films that you get excited about in this year's festival?
Look, for me personally, I really like the selection of foreign language films and some of the films and panels that are part of the activism focus that we have this year. There's some fantastic foreign language stuff. There's a great Chilean film called My Last Round, which is about a middle-aged boxer, you know, obviously in a very sort of male-dominated, masculine kind of sport. He falls for a younger man who ends up in his social sphere, and they end up in this loving relationship. But through sort of homophobia and some misunderstandings, they have some issues in their relationship. And he also has some medical issues that he needs to overcome. And I don't want to give too much away, but it's a fantastic story. You know, we have a South African film this year called Beauty, which is an incredibly challenging but, you know, I think a really strong film. Just a lot of really good sort of foreign language stuff. I'm really pleased that, you know, we're seeing more and more things from places like South America and the Asian countries and that sort of thing. And, you know, we continue to be flooded with American films, but you can be a bit more selective about, you know, putting lots and lots of American independent fluffy things on. You can actually balance it really well with some foreign language titles.
You also speak about the growth in the quality of trans films.
Yeah, we've filmed a record number of trans films this year.
Yeah, can you tell us a bit more about what's on offer this year in the festival for trans people?
Yeah, look, a few years ago it was really, really hard to get decent quality trans films, and then we kind of went through this period where we had lots of, I guess, transition films, documentaries about people going through the medical aspects, which of course are interesting, and I think we'll be seeing those for a long time because it's a very important, crucial part of a trans person's experience. But we are seeing a lot better quality trans material coming in. We've got much more to choose from, a wide variety of topics. You know, I'm really pleased to say that we're actually getting films now that are just great stories that just happen to have trans characters in them. Not, you know, it's not necessarily sort of smashing over the head with any sort of political thing. We're just getting really good quality entertainment with a trans story. Gun Hill Road is one in particular that I would definitely recommend going to see. And also Tomboy, which is, it's kind of an interesting film. It's sort of touted by the festival producers, the film producers, as a lesbian film. But for me, it seems more like a trans story. So maybe sort of 20 years ago, maybe in the eyes of the majority, it might have been a lesbian film. But for me, it's more of a trans story. And we've got lots of great trans documentaries and just sort of spread throughout the program this year. So, you know, we have a dedicated trans doco package, but lots and lots of other trans shorts just throughout the program.
How do people find out about, you know, where to get tickets, where, you know, the program itself? Where do they pick up a program guide? I'd imagine all over town at this point.
Yeah, pretty much all over town. We have a company called Step Right Up who work for the community, and they distribute all over cafes and, you know, around intercity Melbourne, but also sort of a bit further out. So if you can't find one in your local cafe, you can get one online. Obviously, you can have a look online at mqff.com.au. We also have a flipbook on the website, which is basically the guide. You can just flip through, which is just, you know, exactly the same as
it's
done.
It's a very good idea.
And so, yeah, it is a good idea.
It's an amazing thing because it means then people can print out the pages that they're interested
in. Yeah, that's right.
Like that.
Yeah. And as part of our sort of environmental policy with the City of Melbourne is that we're trying not to print as many programs as we have in the past. So we're sort of gradually eking down the numbers that we print. Also, you can pick them up if you're in the city at Acme Cinemas because they're our other ticket seller. And, of course, Hares and Hyenas is our other major ticket seller. So those three places are the best places to get them. But, you know, you have a look at your local cafe.
Okay. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us today, Lisa. There's a hell of a lot. How many sessions?
I think it's 92.
And any idea about how many films?
162. I didn't know.
Wow.
Yeah, so 41 features. And
That,
you know,
that is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's good.
And so go to mqff.com.au.
That's correct, yep.
And you'll find out everything you need to know about this year's festival, and we're sure to see half of Melbourne's queer population in the dark.
I hope so.
Individual health and well-being through stronger community endeavours. Take care out there. Take care out there.
So in the studio now we have Jez Pez, the founder and co-editor of Dude Trans Man magazine. Jez has been very busy the last month launching Dude in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane, and he's here to talk to us today about that experience and also to tell us about the future plans for Dude. Welcome to Take Care on Air, Jez.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
No worries. So Dude was first launched just after the 2011 Midsummer Festival, and it proved to be an instant hit. It went into two printings and is available free online. Jez, did you expect the reaction to the magazine to be quite as frenzied as it was?
Definitely not. It has taken off and it's sort of developed international interest, but it's also grown a pretty solid level of interest here in Australia. We get a lot of organisations, either community organisations or, you know, medical clinics, and that aspect of service providing interested in stocking Dude and learning about, you know, the appropriate language and terminology. But we also get a lot of creative and artistic interest throughout Australia, New Zealand and around the world wanting to participate. And I think everyone in Australia, I mean, my experience in Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane, there's a lot of positive hype and just wanting to be involved in something positive and creative where they have representation and can connect with their community. So it's definitely, I did not expect this level of success in a project, but there's been so many people involved, including Max Attitude and Alwyn Murray, who helped to really project this project further than what I could have done by myself. So I must pay thanks to them as well. But yeah, it's certainly doing good, and Take Care out there have been very supportive and in helping us print the magazine, and it is available online at dudemag.org for free downloading. And recently we actually get an average of 200 downloads a day.
Oh, that's quite impressive.
Yeah.
Very impressive. It's incredible, in
yeah,
fact.
If I advertise something, we will get over 1,000 people just visiting the website, and on average 200 people downloading the zine. We get interest from other countries wanting to translate the magazine into their language. I only have enough time to be able to be attending to one thing at a time, but wow. That's something that's in the pipeline as well.
It must be very encouraging to get that sort of feedback. People are supporting the magazine. There must be a real need for that out there.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a need for something positive and fun and creative and sexy to help us go out and connect with other parts of the community, like any kind of cruising or sex on site premises, and have a tool, something that's been successful. It's easier to educate and to communicate with something that people can, you know, that's something that's quite tactile and people can take away and read in their own time.
Mm.
Yeah.
So tell us, what motivated you to start the magazine? Like, what was the reasoning behind it?
Well, a couple of years ago, I mean, I'd experienced quite a break from anything trans-related and was just, like, living my normal life, going and seeing bands. But someone asked me a really inappropriate question. And it sort of came back to me that there's a gap here in something that's being addressed, and that is other people knowing where the boundaries are and what's appropriate. And that can only be overcome through education, because it's really coming out of ignorance and lack of exposure or lack of experience. So that was essentially what I thought would happen, and it's worked. There's certainly people's boundaries are being held to and respected more, and I hear cases of where someone may come out in a work environment that they're going to transition, and they get asked questions like, oh, well, how are you going to have sex? And other people who have read the magazine can step in, and this has actually happened, and say, hey, you're not allowed to ask that question. Dude Magazine says, you know. So the tool is working to protect people when they're vulnerable as well. So the magazine's working for that reason, yeah.
So would you say it sort of helps people to sort through the confusion? That it's obviously a very complex area, like for people who are experiencing those kinds of situations, as well as people from the outside. So you find it sort of helps to bridge that sort of gap of
lack of
knowledge.
Yeah. I don't think in most cases it comes out of ignorance. It doesn't come out of harm or malice or wanting to make someone feel uncomfortable, but often that is how subtle being offensive can be. So if they are informed and educated in a way that makes them feel sort of confident and safe around how to interact with trans people without them being, you know, subjected to being sort of, you know, dragged over the coals for saying something incorrect, then it just facilitates those interactions in a healthier way.
So it gets more of a discussion happening. Yeah.
Yeah, and trans people can feel like they've had positive exposure and they're being valued and validated because someone else is aware of terminology, and it just overcomes a lot of the uncomfortable situations. But it also addresses a lot of other issues like sexual health, safer sex.
So look, in the last month you've been incredibly busy. You launched it in Melbourne, then you went up to Sydney and you launched it there, then you travelled up to Brisbane and you launched it there. What was it like in the three cities? Were there any difference in characteristics, and was it harder to go into cities where you didn't necessarily know the community quite so well?
Yeah, I have been thinking about this a lot. Firstly, what a privilege for me to be able to be in each community and get to know so many people. If I didn't have a reason like Dude Magazine, then I certainly wouldn't have had access access to that, building that many relationships, but that gave me insight into the difference in each community and each city. And I guess every community is fraught for different reasons, but I think communities like in Sydney, for example, and Sydney is such a big, thriving city, that I think that causes almost more friction by the nature of the way Sydney operates.
A little bit more competition, a little bit more openness, more people involved.
There's more people involved, so there's more personalities. You know, Brisbane is a bit more laid back. There's less people. They definitely talk about things, but it seems to me Brisbane, it does it in a way which doesn't alienate people from the community. They've only really got one community because of the amount of population, so they're forced to deal with their stuff quickly, swiftly, in a healthy way, so that they can still interact and see those people out every week.
Well, Brisbane and Sydney differed very strongly, I know, in the 80s in terms of the way the women's movement were very much structured. Brisbane was much more around discussion, support, and knowing it was a small community and therefore not getting so much into the internecine wars, whereas the lesbian and feminist movement in the 80s in Sydney was a hell of a lot more competitive, I guess.
That might be a point as well. Sydney has also been at the forefront of forging a lot of these new territory around rights and advocacy, and it's usually they probably cop the brunt of oppression and any sort of objection from other parts of our society. So perhaps that also has that fighting edge to it.
Yeah.
And Brisbane maybe has benefited from Sydney leading the way in a lot of those areas.
Yeah.
But there's certainly differences in communities. But I think Brisbane, we have a lot to learn from Brisbane in the way that they approach some things. I think they've done well to have a really sort of cohesive environment up there.
And look, last time you were on Take Care On Air, you were on your way to San Francisco to do a presentation on Dude in that city. How did that go? And how does that compare to Melbourne, Sydney and Brisbane?
Well, San Francisco, we exhibited at the Zine Fest, which was really successful. Also, there's a cruising and sauna club up there called Eros, which there are trans men working, and they hold nights especially for non-trans men who are interested to play with trans men. So there's an organization called TM for M, so Trans Men for Men, and they run a lot of safe sex campaigns and really work to promote healthier interactions and positive sort of sexual environments. So that's something which was incredible in San Francisco. The population of trans people or gender diverse people is a lot larger over there, so there's definitely more content in discussions. There's more awareness around identities and diverse identities. So that's something that I hope to eventually. I'm just waiting for one club in anywhere in Australia to lead the way and say, hey, let's hire a trans guy on our premises. You know, let's facilitate a campaign around trans guys being visually and obviously included in our spaces, and promote one night a month of, you know, trans guys playing with men and do it in a safe way.
That sounds fantastic.
So there's been two issues of Dude magazine released so far. You're currently in the planning stages for a third.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about what readers can expect from the third edition and future editions?
Yep. Like, currently we're accepting submissions for the third issue, which is for the lovers, play partners, families and relationships for people who are involved with trans guys. So it's more to showcase and represent experiences from people who have been involved with trans guys. So we have a guest editing team for that reason, because it's best to have it represented by people in that position. So Kath Duncan is one of the guest editors. Leah Incognito, who's a writer and poet, is also one of the editors. And Nix Matthews is another one. So we're excited to have that team currently already working quite hard on the issue, and we're accepting submissions. So photography, writing, experiences, we're even accepting poetry for this issue, and we'll probably set up some more photo shoots around the country. So what we expect is on that material to cover some nitty-gritty type topics about how difficult it can be to be in a relationship with someone who's transitioning, how it can challenge your own identity, how the community can respond to that, you know, ideas around sex, you know, and relationships and families. So that should be a good issue.
You're listening to Take Care On Air, and we've been speaking with Jez Pez of Dude Magazine. Now, Jez, the question is, where do people get a copy of Dude Magazine? And we'll give that website address out again too.
Yeah, well, basically you can find where we stock it at dudemag.org. We have different stockists around the country in Australia. In Melbourne, one is Hares and Hyenas. There's a few others listed on our website. In Sydney, you can go to Better Red Than Dead and Max Black. And T-Bar, which is a trans group in Brisbane, are going to be selling at their events. And we're looking to stock in a few other bookstores, and there's also stockists in Adelaide and Perth, so you just have to check out our website. You can also download the free version there, and we'll soon be releasing the second issue of Dude for downloading in March.
Now look, finally, issue 3 is due out when?
We expect to launch the third issue around August, September, so it's probably going to be a spring issue.
And potentially an issue 4 early next year?
That'd be early next year, yeah.
Yeah, so you're already starting to accelerate. Look, thanks so much, Jez. It's a pleasure as always to have you in here, and we actually have seen quite a lot of changes just in the first year.
Yeah, it has been very successful. So thanks for your support and thanks for having me.
Joy.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Take Care on Air on Joy 94.9. And on the telephone now we have Deborah Kelly, an artist who works for social change through her artwork. Acclaimed and very well known for a billboard installation, Hey Hetero, a few years ago, which turned the privilege of being heterosexual on its head in a playful but hard-hitting way. The BoatPeople.org refugee project and her beautiful projections on clouds, Beware of the God project, which started at Sydney's Museum of Contemporary Art and travelled to the Singapore Festival. Deborah is currently working on a new project called Holy Families, which takes iconic religious images from history and gives them a modern twist. Good afternoon, Deborah, and welcome to Take Care on Air.
Thank you very much, Crusader.
Now, what is the idea behind your Holy Families project?
First, I want to tell you that Holy Families was the working title.
Right, good.
Which has got a pun in it, which I must say was making me feel a little bit queasy. The real project, I finally realised what the name is called The Miracles.
Fantastic.
The project is about, well, it's about a lot of things, I guess, as all art is, but primarily what it does is thinks about Immaculate Conceptions, the real Immaculate Conceptions or virgin births that are happening all around us now, with children who are conceived in all of the new ways available to us that are not heterosexual sex. Not in any way to insult heterosexual sex, but to say that there are actually ways to make babies which have curious resonances with what my religion, Catholicism, has said about how Jesus and indeed his mother were made.
And in fact, there are heterosexual couples in the project, aren't there?
Actually, there are quite a lot of heterosexual couples, and they, of course, do have sex with each other, but that's not how they made their babies.
Well, hopefully, anyway.
So how did you find the subjects for your photographic series?
Actually, mainly through friends and friends of friends, and a few people. A friend of mine is a sociologist who works with a lot of queer families in some of her investigations, and she helped me a real lot by asking some of them to ask their friends if they would be interested to participate. And I must say, a lot of people have been really, really into it because they feel invisible and not represented. And the work is going to be in the Gallery of Modern Art in Brisbane, which means that there's quite a lot of respect around the way that they will be shown. And I'm really thrilled to be making that available.
That's amazing. Can you give us a little bit of idea about how you're structuring the project? My understanding is that it's based on iconic historical images through the ages of the miracle of conception.
That's nearly it, but the truth is there's not that many pictures of the miracle of conception itself.
Right.
What there are, though, is a huge canon of works about the Holy Family and a whole lot of moments around the pictured life of the Holy Family. So all of the photographs that I'm making of the families who have come to me are based on paintings mainly from around the Renaissance, mainly Italy, but some Northern Renaissance masters as well. But all of the paintings that I'm using as the models for the photographs are paintings that live under some kind of questioning of their authority. So perhaps their attribution has changed through the centuries, or their provenance has been disputed, or, I mean, for instance, a work that was thought for centuries to be by Caravaggio, and it turns out that it's by Bellini or somebody that's now called unknown Northern Italian master. So those are the works that I'm using. So only works that have had some authoritative questioning of the truth of them, because that provides, I think, some poetic analogy to the hostile questions that the families themselves are faced with.
So have you had any feedback or involvement from the religious community about your works? Have they had anything to say thus far about what you've been doing?
Some of the people people in the works are religious people themselves,
yep.
which is very interesting to me, but I haven't had any actual feedback from religious community people because I guess mainly because they don't know about it yet because this work is just being made. In Victoria, where I haven't taken any of the photographs yet, I'm just waiting on permits to do so because it turns out that working with children requires state permission in Victoria.
Deborah, how do people find out about your work in general? Do you have a website that people can go and have a look at the fabulous Deborah Kelly canon of work?
That's very sweet of you to say, Crusader, but actually I don't have a website. You could just Google me and there's a whole lot of material that you can find online. There's my representative gallery is Gallery Barry Keldoulis, which is such a tongue twister. I'm so glad I didn't tangle it up on radio, but he's got a whole lot of my work on his website. So, but no, there is an essential place. I think maybe because my work is so different one from the other. I'm actually with my sister right now, and she just was saying to me recently, you're one of those artists who really has to make a decision about what she does.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Deborah, and best of luck
with the project.
You're listening to Take Care On Air, and we'll be back shortly speaking to Max Primer from the Chill Out Festival.
Take care out there. Take care out there. Individual health and well-being through stronger community endeavours.
You're listening to Take Care On Air with Shane McMaster and Crusader Hillis.
Every queer Melburnian knows about the Chill Out Festival, and lots of people from Melbourne get there every year. Daylesford, already a highly visible gay-friendly town, is transformed into a queer mecca for the weekend of the Chill Out Festival. And in the studio with us now is Max Primer, a committee member and a spokesperson for the Chill Out Festival. Welcome, Max.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Now, along with the Tropical Fruits New Year Festival in Lismore, Chill Out must be Australia's best known and highest attended queer rural festival. What do you put your success down to?
I think it's just the fact that it is in such a beautiful part of the world, or part of Daylesford, Victoria, I mean, and everybody just likes to come along and have a really good weekend away, and we put a lot of effort into getting it ready every year.
Yeah, so I understand there's a bit of a pirate theme going
yes.
on with this festival.
Well, we usually have a theme every year for the whole weekend, but it becomes a bit difficult for people to fall into a particular theme, so we decided this year we just have a theme for the parade on Sunday morning, just pirates recapturing the pearl. So there's going to be a lot of pirates and swashbuckling and a few maids tied up maybe to mast or something like that, but it'll be just an interesting day.
Yeah, could you tell us a bit more about some of the other highlights of this year's festival?
Well, pretty much, well, there's a few new things. We've got Paul Capsis appearing this weekend, of course.
That's a bit of a coup to get Paul Capsis on board.
Well, Paul's been up there a couple of times before and done shows at the Palais, but this year he's at the Carnival Day on Sunday in the park, so it'll be a totally different audience for him. Usually the people who go to the Palais are more your older people who go along and have dinner and watch a show. So Paul's going to be performing for a totally gay audience or gay-friendly audience out of the park this year.
Also in the city, you got the GH Hotel Boylesque dancers.
The Greyhound Hotel Boy Dancers will be up there with Paris. Mm-hmm. So that'll be really good for the night for people to watch them. And we've got Dolly, of course, and Luke performing on Saturday night.
Quite a few well-known performers.
And the people are appearing on Sunday. There's Sel Kimber and a few other people up there appearing on Sunday, so it's going to be a pretty full-on day. And there's two stages out at the park. There's one main stage and one smaller stage with sort of more laid-back music to it.
And I noticed that you've got a thing called the Burlesque Dance Party this year.
Yes, well, that's what we've called the dance party
this year. The big dance party
on the Sunday night.
Right.
And it's just called the Burlesque Dance Party. So.
And it's popular as always? It often sells out?
Yeah. Very, very rarely does it not sell out weeks before. I think there might be still a few tickets left, so if anybody needs tickets to the dance party, they can go online or go to Hares and Hyenas in Johnson Street, is it?
Johnson Street,
and get tickets there. But yeah, the dance party is a very popular night.
And so there's also a few food-related events this year. Could you tell us a bit more about those?
Yeah, well, at the park this year, we've got, I think there's nearly 85 stalls out at the park this year on the Sunday, and there's more food stalls than we've ever had before, so there's a great variety of different food stalls. And there's also the train on Saturday night, which is a food and wine train that goes out from Daylesford to Bilato and back again.
Oh, lovely.
Which is really...
So they still use that train line along there?
That has been repaired after the fires a couple of years ago.
Bilato is just a little bit away from Trentham, isn't
it? That's right, yes, out that same area. So the train just toodles along right through the middle of the forest, which is really a really good trip for a lot of people who want to get on there and have a bit of food and wine.
So there's sort of stuff for everyone, really.
There is. And look, if you want to come up there for the weekend and just sit in your accommodation and not do anything, you can do that quite easy too.
I've known people who've done that, but not not because they wanted to, but just because it got so trashed the first night, they had to spend the rest of the time in bed. But look, beyond that, though, speaking of accommodation, how hard is it to get accommodation at this late time to get into Daylesford?
It probably is getting a bit more difficult now. There'll probably be only some fairly exclusive places left. Most of the more reasonable places and the places that sleep a lot of people go very early, and a lot of people do book from year to year. So a lot of people book from last year to this year and take the same accommodation every year. But I think if people want to get up there this weekend, they can get on the website, www.chilloutfestival.com.au, and that'll give you links to the accommodation places.
Okay, and finally, give us the dates and the times.
Okay, it starts on Friday the 9th, and there's an opening party from 6 p.m. at the Town Hall, which is in the middle of Vincent Street, and that's a gold coin donation. And we've got a happy hour from 6 till 7, and then Saturday you've got a few things on, and then it finishes on Monday morning or Monday lunchtime with a brunch.
And there's a choice between a bush dance and a dance party?
Yes, and the bush dance and Dolly on Saturday night, so you can go to the bush dance or you can go to Dolly, or there's a performance down at the Old Hepburn Hotel as well. So there's two or three things to do on Saturday night.
And also great food around the place.
Absolutely.
And lots and lots of tourist attractions and all sorts of things to do in Daylesford.
That's right. It's a really nice place. Just come and visit.
Now, look, finally, Max, is Daylesford the gay-friendly place that people say it is?
Yes. Yes, very much so. Yeah. So I would say most 95 to 98% of the businesses get behind it and really appreciate the people that come in for the weekend, and all the local traders really love the whole weekend.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, you've been hearing from Max Primer from the Chill Out Festival, and you can go to chilloutfestival.com.au.
That's right, Chill Out Festival.
Chilloutfestival.com.au for any details that you need, and there's lots to do up there.
And we hope to see you all there.
And you'll see quite a lot of us up there, I can guarantee. You've been listening to Take Care On Air, and that was Max Primer, and the show has gone very quickly. You have been listening to Take Care On Air. We'll be back on air next Tuesday with Kath Duncan, along with Shane McMaster. And we want to thank our panel operator, the Gazman, and all our guests on today's show, Lisa Daniel, Jez Pez, Deborah Kelly, and Max Primer. Until next week, it's goodbye from all of us.
Also presents Take Care On Air.
Interviews, current affairs, and events from across Victoria.
Also is
your community hub, and also is
proud to sponsor Joy.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.